You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. During this interview, I'm talking with Representative Scott Krug on January 14th. Thank you for joining me, Scott, and bringing the community an update from the 72nd District.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I always love being able to give back a little bit about some of the inside stuff we're doing in Madison. So we always call these like a tutorial on how government actually works. So
excellent. Before we get into what you're actually working on, I have a couple questions for you. The Wisconsin Rapids School Board just approved putting an operational referendum on the ballot for April 7th. The Nakusa School District is also talking about the need to go to a referendum this year. How do you address criticism that the state is not funding schools at the level that allows them to effectively operate without going to a referendum for operational expenses?
Listen, one of the biggest things I think people need to understand about school funding is, you know, long gone are the days that every family has four or five or six kids in the schools anymore, and the regular nuclear family is being shrunken decade by decade. So a family that has one or two kids right now versus families that had four or five, enrollment is declining everywhere across the state of Wisconsin. So I think it's even more important now to put those decisions in the hands of folks in our local communities to decide what that funding is going to look like. Because at the state level, it's not fair to come back to the state and say, hey, we need more funding for less students, unless we have some approval from the voters in our communities, too. So I don't have a problem with the referendum process. If Wisconsin Rapids, Nakusa, Port Edwards, whatever of the nine districts that I represent want to be able to go back to the voters and say, hey, we do have record number of state funding from the state of Wisconsin, but we could use a little bit more. Voters, are you okay with that? Mm-hmm. That is a perfectly normal thing that we should be doing in every one of our communities, is going back to the voters and asking them what their thoughts are. If you look at our population base, we're a very heavily retirement-based area, all the way from Rome where I live, all the way through the Wisconsin Rapids area. And some of these folks haven't had kids in the schools for 50, 60, maybe 70 years. So there's a lot of consternation in our communities right now about people who are worried about the property tax funding our schools. And maybe there's a new way to go about this instead of just leaving it on the property tax burden for everybody to worry about, that we can look into in next session to try to figure out a new way of funding schools.
And then some of the districts, I know in particular Wisconsin Rapids, is looking at potentially consolidating some buildings or how they can bring budget, you know, cut their budgets to be able to meet those operational expenses that they have. Yeah. Do you think other districts should look at that?
Yeah, we've done bills this session and last session in Madison to incentivize consolidation, not looking to take away anybody's personal identities for their areas. For example, we've got three school districts within 5 miles of each other where we are right now, Wisconsin Rapids, Port Edwards, and Nakusa. I don't necessarily want to take away anybody's identity from their sports teams or from their buildings or for their functions, but to consolidate some administration seems like it's something that could make some sense. That would cut some costs. That would alleviate the pressure of having to go to referendum and alleviate the concern of the state not giving more money, even though we're still at record funding for schools. So yes, I mean, consolidation is a key moving forward into the next decade and decade after. Staff-to-student ratios have climbed consistently for the last 10 years. Declining enrollment, like we mentioned earlier, is just persistent for the last 20 years. The writing's on the wall. We need to figure out different ways of doing this. Consolidation is really one of those things we have to look at doing.
What are your thoughts on the voucher system that are funding for some, you know, like Assumption Catholic School? People can send their students to a private school and have state funding for that.
Huge supporter. You know, I get a monthly paycheck from the state of Wisconsin for the work that I do. I don't think it would be fair if the state of Wisconsin said, here's your paycheck, you can only go spend it at Walmart, right? I have to have some choice. I have to be able to make the decisions that are best for my family. And if we could do more of that in education, we've seen over the last 30 years that a one-size-fits-all education system does not work in any way, shape, or form in any civilized society. To give options, flexibilities, competition, that drives creativity, that drives innovation, that drives success. So the consternation that might still exist a little bit of the voucher program has decreased quite a bit in the last 10 to 15 years, where you see polling showing 60 to 70% support for the system. that creates that competition, that drives everybody to do better, and gives those local schools the opportunity to compete for those students to say, hey, we've got a great program, bring your student to us.
Do you feel then that there should also be requirements for, say, teacher's licenses in those private schools, background checks, those types of things, for them to be able to receive that state funding going forward?
Yeah, you know, we do hear that too. And there is no school that I know of in the voucher program anywhere within central, northern, eastern, western Wisconsin that does not do a good job on hiring teachers and doing background checks and making sure that the teachers are competent and licensed and people that can actually lead a classroom instead of people just being pulled off the street. So, again, we hear a lot of those buzzwords and a lot of the concerns that are out there about this program, but, you know, the fact is these are very great programs. These are great teachers, and if you look at schools like Assumption here in Wisconsin Rapids, Emmanuel Lutheran here in Wisconsin Rapids, that program has saved those schools. And those are very vital to our community just as much as the public schools have been over the history of our area.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let's move into a talk about public access to the legislature. For the past 18 years, Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network has streamed free, live, and unedited coverage of the Wisconsin legislature, executive branch, and the state Supreme Court. Right now, the only way people can see proceedings at the Capitol is if they go there in person. Does that concern you?
A little odd yesterday. It was the first time that we had a session day that Wisconsin Eye was not live recording the entire thing for everybody to see. And, you know, one of the concerns, we gave a $10 million endowment to Wisconsin Eye in the last state budget and said, hey, offer this endowment. If you go raise some private funds to get started, we'll have this endowment in place that you can live off the interest for the rest of your existence. Wisconsin Eye was not able to go out into the community or the state of Wisconsin as a whole to raise any money whatsoever. And now that it's gone dark, quote unquote, now they've started things like a GoFundMe and to go back and try to figure out how to raise money, when the last 2 years, they haven't done anything to try to raise those funds. And that's the concern, I think, right now, is the leadership issue at Wisconsin Eye. Listen, the legislature is not going to go without somebody recording our proceedings, to making sure that we're open to transparency, that everybody has access. It'll be Wisconsin Eye at some point. There will be another bill that will help fund Wisconsin Eye. But the leadership of Wisconsin, I also has to recognize that they have to do some work, too, to get themselves on solid ground, to get support from their communities. It's the same argument we've had for decades about public television and public radio. If the public really is concerned and interested in listening and using, I don't know why Wisconsin would have such a hard time raising some funds. And that's where our concern is right now. We will go back. We will find some GPR money to get to Wisconsin, I get proceedings recorded again. But at the same time, we've got to make sure that the people that are consuming it are also part of the payment plan to make sure that it is functional and usable.
So do you feel like this is a wake-up call to them?
It has to be. And I think that's one of the things we've gone back to the board of directors saying, hey, you know, we went out on a ledge last time to put this endowment together for you. You haven't done anything. Why not? Now that they see that they're dark, I think this is the wake-up call that they'll need to keep their efforts going on one end to bring good quality content, but on the other end to try to describe to the people of Wisconsin what they are, what they do, and why it's important.
Mm-hmm. And right now there's a sign outside of the assembly that says no recordings, so nothing is being recorded right now.
From the public. That rule's always been there. And we've always had that same rule right now. So without Wisconsin Eye, there's some thought out there that people wanted to do private recordings and have their cell phones out. And those are things that have been longstanding rules in the state assembly. Long before Wisconsin Eye was there, these are the same rules that have always been in place. So we do have credentialed media there all day, every session. With WSAU, even in Wausau, last week was down live streaming some committee meetings too. So there's mm-hmm. other ways to go about this besides just Wisconsin Eye. We do have the Legislative Technical Services Bureau, so our LTSB. It's also an option for recording. We have internal videographers. We have credentialed media. I mean, there's no shortage of people at the Capitol yet. It's just the buzzword of WSI not being
on. But the credentialed media isn't necessarily immediately available to the public.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So when WSAU is actually live streaming committee meetings, I mean, it's a step in the right direction. Mm. So, you know, as much as the community wants coverage from a media outlet, it's on part of the community's out, you know, outreach to their media to say, hey, we'd like to hear more. Can you bring us more content? And I think WSAU stepped up, and I think other media has stepped up this last week to try to fill some of the void.
All right. Well, let's take a brief moment to hear from our sponsors. I'm Melissa Kay talking with Representative Scott Krug, and you're listening to Perspective on 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR. Welcome back. You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community, and I'm talking with Representative Scott Krug. Again, Scott, thank you for taking the time today.
Hey, it's always great to be in this well-lit, funded studio. It's beautiful here. So,
well, we've just been talking about Wisconsin Eye having shut down and school funding. And then also, now let's move into some of the things that you have been working on in the legislature. Veterans Service Offices. The 2025-27 state budget includes increases in grants for county and tribal veteran services offices. The annual grant levels are now tied to the county populations, establishing a more equitable and predictable funding structure. How will these increases help veteran service offices and more importantly, and by extension, help veterans?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things we get questions about in my office is, you know, I'm a veteran. What can I do about this? What can I do about that? I think the funding levels for county veteran services offices have been so low over the last decade that the ability for them to do outreach to the community to tell people they even exist has been a challenge. So I'm hopeful now that we've got this more equitable funding stream that they can do a little bit more self-promotion and let veterans know, especially now. You look at the last class of veterans who served overseas in combat, and they're starting to become senior citizens themselves, even from Desert Storm. So you go back to the conflicts we had before that, and the aging and long-term care issues that veterans are facing does not get any easier without people in our community being able to help locally. So the county's veteran service offices have to be that first contact for people, and if they don't know that they even exist, the first contact they make is to somebody in D.C. or to somebody in Madison, and it becomes a runaround then, whereas if everybody knew that they have a CVSO officer in their local county courthouse, things would be so much easier for them all around to get access to their VA benefits for health care, for dental, for pension issues. I mean, you name it, we get those calls from veterans all the time saying, where do I go, who do I talk to? So hopefully we can get the CVSO offices at our county levels to be able to promote a little bit more so everybody knows that they're there.
Because those services aren't just for veterans, but they're also for veterans' families.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's one of the bigger things that are out there, too, is, you know, veterans' families are, you know, survivor benefits and all the other things that go along with that to make sure that they can coordinate things that they were never exposed to, especially in a circumstance where they didn't expect to have to deal with it. It makes it even harder for them to even get started. So, yeah, I mean, those services are absolutely critical. So that's what the county structure is meant to cover.
And with the expansion of the PACT Act, that has also opened up more opportunity for assistance for veterans.
Yeah, I think you see a push from the federal government. And honestly, I think the most bipartisan issue that we've seen in my time in the state legislature have been veteran issues. So it's never been a question of how we're going to help, how much we're going to help. It's just a matter of who's going to help and how we help people know where to go.
Mm-hmm. And how to get in contact with them.
Right, yeah.
So if those veteran offices are better able to outreach, how do you see that being implemented?
It's as simple as you see from other county services where you get a flyer to go out into the community, be posted at the ADRC, for example, or, at the community center for veterans who are aging or who are going for meals and going for walking and going for entertainment, just to be able to find another pamphlet on the wall is probably one of the most effective things they can do. But the budgets are so tight, can't even afford to print something sometimes. So hopefully,
let alone print it in color.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing, too, is just making sure that they can find an outlet, whatever it is, whether it's putting something into a newspaper. Well, we don't have a whole lot of newspapers anymore either, but that's the same problem we have, is trying to figure out how that outreach can be effective. But to be able to have some money to go into the community to spread the word a little bit would help, whether it's more local meetings for informational purposes or printing or media, purchased media for them to describe their benefits. Those are things that are all going to help with bigger budgets.
Mm-hmm. And in your last e-update that you sent out, you discussed National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day and taking a moment to thank those who serve in our law enforcement and the important role that they play in our communities.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird time, right? To be in law enforcement or involved in law enforcement, you see all the things that are going on in Minnesota and federal issues with ICE, and I think people tend to start lumping some of those folks together and, you know, trying to keep the understanding of protect and serve is something that has always been super important to every one of our local law enforcement officers in central Wisconsin. I don't want to see them getting lumped in with something that's happening nationally that's grabbing attention. So yeah, we did want to point it out this week that it was National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. We'd even got some emails to my office saying, well, you didn't mention anything about the officers from January 6th in D.C. And so that's what I talk about sometimes, that everything gets so nationalized that we forget about the guy who helped somebody who fell off the pier, you know, get rescued in the tide and the current, and who saved their lives by giving them CPR. And it just, I think sometimes we conflate those two things too much. So mm-hmm. trying to stay away from the national narrative sometimes would be helpful for us just to recognize that the people who are in our communities who are protecting and serving really are here doing the protect and serve more than grabbing national headlines.
Well, along with those national headlines, are you hearing from constituents with concerns about the federal escalation of ICE activities?
Honestly, no. And that, you know, we you know, you hear about it in, you know, TV and see it in news and things like that. But I've not had one constituent reach out to us about anything that's going on in Minneapolis or other parts of the country. Yeah, besides maybe somebody saying, "Hey, did you see what's going on here?" type of thing. So, you know, it's always interesting to try to deal with the juxtaposition of federal politics and state politics, or state politics and local politics. You know, right now, I think if I gave an assessment of where everything's at here in the Rapids area, I think everything is more local politic driven right now, you know, solar panels and, you know, all those types of things. And then again, federally with what, you know, the Trump administration is doing. So I think people are kind of letting the state guys slip a little bit in their thoughts and ideas. And I would really appreciate if people could keep a focus on what they needed from us here at the state level, too, because we don't get as much headlines as the local and federal guys do, apparently.
Well, one of the topics that has come up here recently, as you said, the solar panels, but also data centers. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, you know, when this whole solar array that started to come to Rome was going through the permitting process, started hearing a lot of folks saying, okay, well, now the solar project has been completed in Saratoga. There's one coming to Rome. They're all going to be put together to fund a data center for their energy. Where's the data center going, Krug? Well, there's no data center coming here, but we did have the one proposed in Wisconsin Rapids. So just knowing, again,
which that one didn't happen.
It didn't happen. Right.
They withdrew that it was supposed to be.
Yeah,
confirmed.
They just didn't end up having the power that they needed, and they didn't have the land that they wanted to expand and all those things. So what we did is, again, taking the three or four examples we had from statewide from the news where there's protests and concerns. So we did put together a bill this session. We're hearing it today, I think, in committee. We'll vote it on the floor next week just to say, okay, here's what we're going to do with data centers. Can't stop them from coming to Wisconsin. It's all private driven from one private company to another to sell land and to build something. We can't stop that. But what we can do is all of the energy that goes into a data center or that's on the grid or that gets transmitted in the state of Wisconsin is public domain. It's paid for by the public. So the biggest thing we're doing in the data center bill is saying, hey, whatever the data center is going to consume for energy, it's going to be out of their pocket, not out of our pocket. We're not going to see energy costs increase because the data center coming to Wisconsin Rapids, for example. Also going to say, hey, if you're going to depend on renewable energy for your data center project, it's all got to be located on your premises. It's all got to be locally created power that stays on the grid locally, because that is the biggest problem that we've got right now with these large-scale utility projects, is all of the energy created here goes onto the grid, goes out of state, goes somewhere else, isn't used one bit locally. So for data centers, that's what we're going to require, is if you're going to use renewables, it's got to be all on your own site. Not taking up farmland, not going through the PSC process that ignores local zoning. Buy the land, put it on your property. Next thing in the data center bill is we're saying, hey, if you start a project and you decide to pull out of the project, but you started a building or you put some infrastructure in, the local community is going to be able to decide how that land is going to be used in the future. If they want to leave the road, great. they want you to tear down your building that you started but didn't finish. You got to tear it down. We're not going to leave any blights in our community because somebody started and stopped, which was what my worry would have been in Wisconsin Rapids, right? And I think the other thing we did is on the environmental side. People are very concerned about the water usage for data centers. So in this bill, we are requiring any data center that comes to Wisconsin into the future to use a closed-loop water system. Which uses way less water, right? And any discharge that comes out of that is already covered under EPA guidelines. It's already covered under DNR standards with our discharge permitting process. So a closed-loop process is going to be required for any data center. We're going to make sure, if they're going to happen, they're going to come to Wisconsin. We have the climate for them. They love the cool climate. They love the cold weather.
And the water.
They love the water. They love the renewable energy that we have. I mean, we're a hot spot for their growth into the future, but we're going to make sure that it's not going to cost taxpayers or ratepayers one red cent because they want to come and develop in their community.
Does this bill have bipartisan support?
I don't think it does today. But we did have meetings with the Democrats in the legislature the last couple of days to say, okay, this is what we want to do. Their bill is different. Their idea is to require renewable energy to be used, which in my estimation, if it would pass, they don't have the on-premises part in their bill. So that would just expand the consternation in our communities about large-scale utility projects happening and being used for data centers. So there's some things that I think they're going to end up getting supportive of. I know the governor is much more supportive of it than the Democrats in the legislature are. So I think right now we're more just worried about what the governor will do as opposed to what the Democrats in the legislature might or might not want.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time today, Scott. I'm Melissa Kay, speaking with Representative Scott Krug of the 72nd District. Thank you for talking with me,
Absolutely,
Scott.
Absolutely, anytime. Thank you.
And thank you to listeners joining us for News in Our Community on Perspective, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR.